People Helping People, a program bridging the community with local organizations and nonprofits making a difference in the Bay Area. If you or someone you know would like to get your messages on People Helping People, please email us at contact@poly923fm.com or desipeoplehelpingpeople@gmail.com. Here are your hosts, Larry Walling and Greg Pirillo.
Hello and welcome to another edition of People Helping People on Bali 92.3 FM. My name is Greg with my co-host Larry.
Good morning.
Good to be with you, my friend.
Nice to be here.
It seems like we're finally getting out of the wet spell.
Until tomorrow.
Well, no. They're saying they're saying this whole coming week is supposed to be sunshine, which has been rare lately.
Yeah, that's we can use a drying out.
It seems strange, though, to complain about
rain
when living here because we have such little amounts of it. And then they, like last week, we were talking about how we shouldn't hear anything about droughts, but they're saying that we're not even close to out of the drought yet, which is just absurd to me. I think they're just saying it to us so we all continue to
serve. Yeah, I don't know what to believe anymore.
It bothers me so much. But anyway, so anyone who's just tuning in for the first time to this show, every week we do this show, People Helping People. It's an opportunity for us to bring others from the community that are doing brilliant, wonderful things for other people, people helping people, so to speak, and also bringing in nonprofits and charitable organizations and just good people that are doing good things. And we've had many repeat guests on the show, but very few that we enjoy having more than today's guest. We're lucky 2 weeks in a row we had old friends in the studio.
Sherry last week? Was it
Sherry? Yeah, Sherry was last week. But this week, I don't know if people who are listening remember back in our days on 1170, we used to have a lady in there, Jennifer, who used to come in from Real Options, and she started this with us. And then Jennifer left last year and introduced us to the person who would be taking over for her, who has since changed her name, changed her identity essentially to try and avoid us. I'd like to welcome, I'm going to say this right because I've been saying it in an Italian way, Chris Conacandi.
Very good.
That's good, right?
Thank you,
Greg.
Because
it sounds Italian. Chris from Real Options, it's so lovely to have you again.
And so great to be back here.
It's amazing because you came in today and you had like a few papers and you were prepared, but you now know what to expect. Most people come in here and they're a little thrown off by Larry and my rapport and how we always joke around with each other, but you are right in it. You knew what to expect. She's
she's used to us now. She's used to us.
Yeah, she's one of us.
Yeah, she's one of us.
So what's happening? Tell us. Catch us up. So tell us first, I think we should start with Real Options because some people listening might not know what it is. Can you explain a little bit of what Real Options is?
Real Options has four pregnancy clinics in the Bay Area, two in San Jose, one in Union City, and one in Mountain View. And we offer things like STD testing, free pregnancy testing and ultrasounds, options consultation, and a lot of practical support. We have community outreach programs like education, which I'm a big part of, and other outreach programs to the community.
So you're not just working with parents, you're working with kids, you're working with teens that might have questions about sexuality or about parenting or about whatever, right? I mean, there's just a whole wide range of where would you say the more of the focus is, with the children or the parents?
Well, historically, it has been with the teens because Real Talk for Parents was really new the last time I was on the show last summer. But since that time, we've gotten a few more Real Talk for Parents under our belt and figuring things out and where the needs are. And that is really where I'd say is the growing area. I think parents are kind of confused about, like, when do I have the talk? And it's not really just the talk. It's a series of conversations from now into pretty much adulthood. Yeah. And they don't know how to do it. A lot of us, you know, come from cultural backgrounds where we typically don't talk about that kind of thing. And then we're dealing with sex ed in the public schools and how do we understand what our kids are being taught and that type of thing. So I think that's been opening up a lot of opportunities for us to share with parents kind of what they can expect and how to open up healthy conversations with their kids and how to monitor them, basically.
Larry, we've had several shows around this topic, and we've had our own listeners and clients talk to us about the difficulty in talking. I mean, wouldn't you say that that is one of the number one things we hear about the communication and how to communicate this?
Absolutely. And I was just going to say on that topic, who do you think has a harder time talking about it, the teenager or the parent?
I would almost say it's equal, because when I'm out talking with the students, one of the things that we encourage all the time is for them to talk to their parents, and I always get a collective groan. But, you know, studies show that the kids say, you know, like watching a TV show with them, for instance, you know, if they're Netflix binging on a particular show, that 75% of them say they would love for their parents to watch it with them, and that would be a natural and easy way to open up those conversations. But they're not really willing to go to their parents and talk to them.
Is it because of peer pressure, you think?
That's unbelievable.
Their friends are kind of like, you know, it's not a cool thing to do.
No, because I think they can talk to their parents and not really have to admit that to their friends. Mm-hmm. I think it's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. They just feel embarrassed bringing up the subject or talking about it. Or sometimes they don't feel safe necessarily.
Yeah.
But parents, on the flip side, they're just as uncomfortable, I would say, most of the time.
I think we can all relate to this, right? Because like you don't know what, first of all, what words are you going to use, right? Like how are you going to get the message across without sounding, you know, I guess you don't want to try and sound like you're being forward or, you know, or assuming they know more than they do. So it's almost like, what do I talk about? What age do I start talking to them about this? Is 10 too young? We had parents in here, a whole group of parents from one of the local school systems who were getting together to talk about how difficult this is, and that they thought they were maybe teaching the children too young in the schools now. And there was a whole other set of parents who thought that they weren't teaching them young enough. So it's like this sort of conflict within.
You know what? It wasn't just that, though. It was how they were teaching.
That as well, yes.
Because in some instances, it was just a little bit too graphic for the age. And I think that was a big deal with them.
So how does it start, Chris? So like, do you recommend people just call? Do they go to groups where there's other parents or either other teens? Or how does that work with Real Options?
Well, one of the growing things that we've seen is kind of this desire to have simultaneous Real Talk for teens and Real Talk for parents. So the teens are in one room, parents are in another. That way the kids are comfortable asking questions, genuine questions, without feeling like their parents are hearing what they're talking about. And then also the parents can be informed of what the students are learning in the other room, and then also go away having more tools and being equipped to kind of open up those conversations and say, hey, I heard you learned this, and let's have a conversation about that.
So it's all fresh in their minds. They're both leaving, and they now can maybe use that as a starter, as a conversation starter.
Yes.
How often do you do that?
It's just starting to take off. So we've done this a few times, we're in the conversations with multiple different groups to book more. And one of those groups is a good example. You were bringing up, you know, the confusion of like sex ed, say, in the schools, and that some parents think, oh, it's too much, it's too graphic, it's too young of an age. And other parents are like, oh, no, I think they should be learning more at a younger age. And there's a lot of confusion around that. And so parents have the right to review the material. And so if they're in a public school that is providing that sex ed, they can go to a parent review night and actually learn what the kids are learning. And if they're not comfortable with it, they have the choice to opt out. And so one of the groups that we're talking with is a larger group of parents who chose to opt out. And then they're stuck. They're like, oh my gosh, does this mean I have to have those conversations?
Now it's on me.
Right. Yeah. And so that's another good opportunity where we can kind of step in and fill that gap for the parents.
I was thinking about the fact of with the parents themselves. Do you go to the schools? Is it possible? I remember maybe it was you or even may have been Jennifer a couple times back talking about how there were parents that were reaching out to you guys and saying, like, can you come and speak to the kids in our school, or can you come and maybe do some education at schools? Because I feel like sometimes even the teachers themselves, they're not getting, you're getting valuable information. You know, your whole purpose is to work with this. So I feel like you might have information that would be important or pertinent to the schools so that they can maybe take that data or that information and maybe improve upon what they're doing. Do you guys get involved like that still?
Yeah, I mean, we would love for people, if they, you know, have a parent night or something like that at their school, to invite us into that. We have done Real Talk for parents in the schools, but I would say most of the adult exposure has been in a Real Talk for teens, where teachers, administration, and then parents kind of sneak in and watch some of that.
Well, let's get real. Let's talk. So what are some of the issues right now that we're dealing with? What are the major topics that are you're finding are most prominent now? Because times have changed. Obviously, 5 years ago was drastically different than it is now. They're changing so quickly now. What are you finding are the big issues?
The STD rate is just, it continues to skyrocket. There's 20 million new cases of STDs in the U.S. alone per year.
20 million a year?
20 million, and half of those are in young people ages 15 to 24.
Wow.
So we have to really get the message out to the kids about how to protect themselves, because they're right in there, the high school kids.
What about pregnancy?
Pregnancy has actually gone down a little bit, and actually number of kids having sex while still in high school has continued to decrease as well.
Really?
But some of the problems are with technology changing so much that part of the reason could be that kids are not having face-to-face conversations and interaction.
That's really true.
It's one of the theories of why the rate of sexual activity is going down. We don't know. There could be lots of reasons.
I think of like sexting, right? It didn't, like, it wasn't when I was in high school. There wasn't even email. You know, like, you just didn't have these things to think about. Not just the fact of the pressures involved with it, because I would think that, and even in the sense of bullying or like being intimidated by somebody and maybe not being ready for these conversations, but because you're behind a phone and it's a text message, it's not, you're almost hiding behind something. I feel like you're maturing faster than you would typically mature, right? Because you have more access to things.
And yes.
It's easier to say something behind a phone, right?
Absolutely.
Is that a major thing, or is it just in my brain?
It's a huge thing. And kids are getting smartphones at a younger and younger age. Mm-hmm. And then if you can, you know, pair that with the parents not knowing how to talk to their kids, maybe not having a family media contract or a cell phone contract, and then the kid has a phone with easy access to the internet, all the social media apps that they want, and without parental supervision. So that's just a huge cocktail for problems like
that's
that.
That's major.
Yeah. I was actually just thinking that same thing. I'm like, you know, how old is the right age? What's the right age to have a kid? You know, you want them to be safe, like go to their friend's house, you have a phone. But are we just being ridiculous thinking like they have to have, well, I didn't have a phone, you know, so we got by just fine. But is it just because of the times you want your child to have a phone and have access to them at all times, even if it means giving them a phone at 12 or 11 years old? Is that too young? What's the right age?
Yeah, I think more and more kids are getting smartphones in elementary school.
Elementary school. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think it starts out of what you said. It's out of a desire for the parent to be able to reach the kid all the time, you know, so that they can at least reach them by text and know where they are and communicate with them. And some of them are choosing to get, like, you know, I think you can still get some phones where even in smartphones, you can turn off internet access. But kind of those pay-as-you-go phones where they're very limited and you can just do texting. But they're harder to come by, and it's just easier and more accessible for parents to just get smartphones.
Yeah, that's where the parent has to just step in and just get that phone that's restricted.
They sell the phones, right? They still sell like those like pay-as-you-go phones that are really no internet access. It's just a phone. It's just for text messaging and phone calls. So they do make them, I know.
Yeah,
but
they
do. But you
would
think that would be something, they would make an app that is like a parent, it's an app that a parent has access and can actually control all of the apps that come onto the phone, all of the, you know what I mean? Whereas like sort of, I guess, surveillance of some kind, but it's also just keeping it so that they know they can't do anything else on that phone unless I say it's okay to do it. Mm-hmm. You would think maybe that's what we should do. We should come up with an app.
There are a lot of monitoring apps out there.
I have this brilliant idea. I'm going to make a monitoring app.
Sorry,
Craig, you're not going to.
It's already been done.
I wanted to go back to something you were talking about, because you were kind of on the track of talking about cyberbullying and things like that.
Yes, let's get to that.
And I actually just did a huge assembly yesterday, and a lot of things came up about what the kids are doing online, and that it's not a majority of kids that are sexting, for instance, but it's helping them understand what some of the potential consequences can be. But a majority of kids are involved in some way, shape, or form with cyberbullying. And that's because they have so many different access points to the internet and to social media. And so one of the big focuses on there was kind of the role of a bystander. because if even I think the numbers are, like 15% of teens sext and about 27% receive sext messages. Cyberbullying is somewhere around 25%.
Wow.
Of people who have been bullied. And so bullying is really ongoing behavior. So it's ongoing, you know, tearing down somebody. But there are a ton of people that are bystanders to this activity. And so that was kind of a big focus for me.
What do you mean by bystanders? I'm not sure I understand that.
Well, there's one study that showed that 95% of teens who witnessed bullying on social media said that they, just like their peers, ignored the behavior. They did nothing.
To not get involved.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the easiest role to fall into. But the bystanders can, you know, like the victims are so lonely. They feel so alone. And targeted. And so if somebody chooses to not just stand there and do nothing, but actually maybe reach out to the victim, it can make a world of difference to the victim. Mm-hmm. So
it's a very interesting topic, actually. There's I think I brought it up on a couple of weeks ago. I brought it up on the show, Larry. I don't know if you've heard about this, Chris, a show called Undercover High that just was on maybe A&E, one of those channels. It was five or six young adults, like 22 to 26. They put them back into this transient high school Topeka, Kansas, and actually had them go as undercover students. So they went through a whole school year, and the students thought they were just new students moving into town. And because there's such a, Topeka, Kansas is the highest number of transient people in the country, right? So each year people are in and out of there for whatever, it's a center point of the country too. So I guess moving is a halfway point, whatever it is. And when this show followed these students throughout their day and throughout the course of this school year, and it blew my mind, first of all, because most of them were only out of high school for 3 to 5 years. So you wouldn't think that's that far. And almost all of them said they couldn't imagine being in high school right now. Even though they just graduated a few years ago, things have changed that drastically to the point where they were saying, the amount of bullying and the type of bullying, it's more psychological stuff, which is more damaging than physical. Like, it's almost like one kid said, you know, he was gay, and he said that he was physically bullied in high school more, and he preferred that because, like, usually if you get physically bullied or something, usually it's that and it's over. Once they get that aggression out or whatever, it's over. And it's sad to think this way, but he said because the psychological effects are so much worse, because you start thinking of these things and it can be done in a way where you're not face to face with somebody, so it's sort of there in writing and print and lives on. But they were so freaked out, these undercover students, by the way things are now. And not just having phones in the school and the teachers not knowing what to do. They can't throw all the kids out. They can't expel all the kids for using their phones. And none of them will listen because they're like, if everybody else is doing it, I'm going to do it. Just some of the challenges that they're facing. And when they brought this to the parents were floored because most of them were just disconnected, didn't know. I mean, I don't think I'm that disconnected, but I was that disconnected. So I would imagine as parents, it's got to be like this new frontier. It's like, what do we do now? You know, I guess we need to get back to the drawing board and start to figure out what works now.
Yeah.
And that's why it's amazing what Real Options is doing, because I think you're kind of doing those things.
Yeah, we really have to constantly be doing research and keeping up with what the kids are into with technology, because it changes all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and just as soon as we figure out, oh, this is what it means, they move on to something else. But we've been able to provide that. So at a recent Real Talk for Parents, I did a little quiz to see if the parents could identify apps based on the logo.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a bunch of them that they didn't recognize. And so it just kind of helps raise awareness, like, yeah, you know, your kids might actually be using that. Or here are ways that your kids can hide photos on their phone, hidden folders. And so I think that was kind of eye-opening. And even just yesterday at my assembly, I had a counselor approach me and say, hey, I just heard that some of the kids are on Tinder.
What? High school?
This, yeah,
I think
actually.
They had to be 18 or something for that, or 21, no?
Yeah.
Wow. So we were just talking about one thing, and now it goes into a whole other thing. You know, meeting people. Like, you know, not, I don't want to say stalking, but like there's, you know, who are your kids talking to? You know, if you don't know what apps they're on, if you don't know where they're chatting, parents are just figuring out Facebook. You know, they're just getting into that. Kids aren't there anymore. They're on Snapchat. Oh, yeah. They're on, and there's those photos come and go. Boom. You don't even know they're even there. So, do you think parents are not knowledgeable enough as to what is trending now and what, like, how they're talking or how they're, where they're talking? And is that something that they're we're getting better at recognizing?
I think they're not knowledgeable enough in general. I think some parents are pretty good at being, you know, diligent in what their kids are doing. And like, hey, I signed the phone contract. I'm paying for the phone plan. So I have a right to look at your phone. There are some parents that are pretty good about that.
Okay. How do you feel about that, Larry? As a parent, obviously, do you feel that you want to be more, would you want to be more involved and learn more where
that was going to be my question. So I think what it really boils down to is communication, the right kind of communication, and when they have that communication with your child. If you have the right kind of communication, they're a lot more apt to open up to you and less apt to get involved in these types of things. So, I mean, what we're doing right now, they're essential, but they're almost like Band-Aids because we're treating it after the fact. But if we can nip it in the bud, in the beginning, teach the parents that they need to communicate with their child. And it might not always be comfortable. It wasn't comfortable for me, but I have a great relationship with both of my kids now because of that. And it was difficult to do that. And I think that's one big thing that has to be impressed upon parents, especially when we're multicultural here in the Bay Area. So we're dealing with a lot of different dynamics as well.
That's true. And one of the things that was coming to mind as you were talking about that, Larry, is that it's this idea that we as parents can kind of heap shame onto our kids. And when we do that, we break the very fibers of trust. And
so
in order for our kids to feel comfortable talking with us about these very uncomfortable subjects, they have to trust us. It's not just like they earn our trust and so now, you know, they're worthy of us having the conversation. They don't want to have the conversation in the first place. Mm-hmm. So they need to feel heard. They need to feel like they won't be shamed. And so I always talk to the parents about like, hey, we have to start out being calm. You know, and I talk about when I first discovered my son looking at pornography.
Yeah.
And I had to wait because if I reacted in that moment, it would not have been, I would have shut him down.
Sure.
And I know I would have heaped shame onto him.
Yeah.
And that's not the kind of behavior that opens up the doors to healthy conversations with
our wife. And we talked about this the last time you were in too. I remember that. Just, you know, talking about shame and shame-based cultures and things like that and how we as parents sometimes do that with our children. And it does shut them down. And it is really hard really not to do that because you just want them to know what they're doing.
Well, you lived, you experienced it, right? Like, I mean, I think parents project too because they know what they went through and what where they made mistakes. So you feel like I need to tell my daughter or my son so they don't make the same mistakes, but we also forget that they're going to fall, they're going to make mistakes. We have to show them that we're not going to shame them for it or make them feel guilty about it because think about it. How many parents have said like, don't do this to their child and it's something they had already done. Like I was, another thing, teen pregnancy, right? A teen mom has a child at 14 or 15 years old or even younger, and then their child grows up and they're now 13 or 14 years old and they're active sexually, that mother is going to probably be like, look, you do not want to make the same mistakes I made, but the chances are that they might repeat that behavior, right? And how do you get mad at somebody for doing exactly what you did? You can't change people. It's got to be so hard what you do.
It is a hard balance as a parent.
Yeah.
Because we want our kids to be happy. We want our kids to be healthy. And that's really where it's coming from. But oftentimes it comes out in a judgmental way or that we're not listening. Like how many of us have heard from our kids, no, you're not listening to me.
Yeah, all the time, I'm sure.
And we don't. And you think about, we parents are just as guilty about being on our smartphones and not modeling good behavior and effective communication.
This could be a topic that could go on for literally hours and hours and hours because as we say one thing, it's like peeling it away.
Yeah,
layer
it opens
of an onion.
Up something else.
And all these things are in my head because you're absolutely, I think we forget that we are now slaves to our cell phones and our devices. We are. My parents were over visiting here last year around before Thanksgiving. And there were times where I was sitting on the couch just wanting to talk to them and my mom and father were both, my dad was reading a book on his Kindle and my mom was on Facebook and I was like, let's talk. Like, I want to just sit and talk and think about old things. And they were like, hold on. You know, we're just looking at, and my mom's like, oh, let me show you this recipe. Everything was online. I was like, you guys aren't supposed to be doing this at 70.
I was going to say, I should have been you, not them.
I know, and I was sitting there without my devices.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, how the roles have reversed.
Yeah, that's true.
But it is a strange, we don't take the blame sometimes. sometimes as adults, right? Because we think we know everything. And maybe we do, but we likely don't.
I don't think so.
So, Chris, I mean, first of all, I want to talk about the event that's coming up, and that's only, it's less than 2 months away. So I do want to touch on that. But before we do that, what do you think is the best piece of advice you could give to parents right now, or even children listening, teens that are listening to this station right now? Where do they go today? Give them something that they could take away and say, you know what, I'm going to try this, or I think that's good advice.
Oh, wow, that's a tough one. I think...
Could it be communication? Is that the number one thing, possibly?
Yeah, I think the thing is when they reach that stinky teenager age where they're, you know, kind of rolling their eyes and that type of thing, the instinct is to kind of pull away. Because it's hurtful. It can be hurtful when your teenager treats you like that. And I'm starting over again. I have an 11-year-old stepdaughter now.
So. Oh, welcome.
Yes. And I only have boys, so I'm learning. But
different.
I think in those moments, my encouragement is to not give up, not get discouraged, not withdraw, but to actually press in closer. And then, and that's how you build the relationship. And then to just be transparent with your kids as it is appropriate age-wise. You know, because like you were saying, we project our own stuff and our own past onto our kids. And we kind of need to deal with that first. The only way that I was able to start having open conversations with my kids is I had to deal with my own past first. And once I was transparent and vulnerable with my kids about that, they can handle it.
Yeah, I agree.
And they know way more than we parents think they know. I was on a website and 13 and 14-year-old kids and younger were chiming in with comments. And they almost hands down, all of them said, we know everything about sex. I was exposed to sex, you know, or pornography at age 9. And by that time, I knew everything about sex.
I'm getting sick.
It's true. Yeah, I mean, I knew about all that stuff when I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
Truly.
And but not from your parents, right?
And it wasn't online, I'll tell you that.
No.
It's just difficult. I think that what you said was really, really valuable. And I also think it's also talk to other parents, right? Talk to your peers, because I feel like if you don't have the answer, maybe somebody else can help you work it out. Because it's such a tough time to be a parent. It's always been. I mean, every generation thinks the one before it was, you know, had it easy. My dad used to say that to me, and I'd be like, well, I'm not going to ever say that when I get older. And now I'm like, it was so much easier. It's more difficult, but it's easier, you know. But I want to talk about the Walk for Life. This is coming up on May 12th. And it's a seminal event for you guys, a huge deal. So tell us about the Walk for Life.
It is. You're right. So it is on May 12th from 9 to noon in two locations. So Marshall Cottle Park in San Jose and Kennedy Park in Union City. And it's a community awareness and fundraising event. So you can walk or you can run a 5K. And all of the proceeds go to support Real Options and to help us continue to offer free services to the community.
It's a huge deal. This is important stuff. This is the conversations you're having and the work you guys are doing is for everyone. This isn't, you know, this is truthfully an opportunity where people can help one another without being involved. If you aren't a parent or if you maybe you have friends, or this is an opportunity to get involved and do something great for what I believe is one of the best organizations around here. You guys are amazing. Where can we register?
So it's May 12th is actually Mother's Day weekend. So we say come out and honor your mother and celebrate the gift of life. And you can register at friendsofrealoptions.net.
I really recommend doing it. It's probably going to be beautiful. We'll be out of the rain at that point. And it's a good way to spend your Mother's Day weekend. Maybe a family thing.
Yeah. Fun family event. You can start your own team or join a team. We're going to have fun food.
Use that opportunity to start the conversation while you're walking. Let's chat about these things.
What is this organization that we're walking for? Hey,
let's break down some barriers between the parents and the teens.
Exactly.
It's fun. Yeah. I was there earlier.
It's exciting. And Larry, what about your thoughts before we get out of here?
Well, I mean, I'm a big advocate of communication, especially with your kids. And that would be my advice to parents out there right now that are struggling communicating with their kids. And do it as early as you can. And so that way they'll grow into it when they are teenagers and they're going through that weird time in their lives. They will be adapted to that with you. And I think it'll be a lot easier.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. You are the conscience of the show, I like to say.
I don't say you much, but I listen to what you say.
Yeah, I know. You're a great listener, and you always seem to take everything and churn out one particular thing it all up.
Just one.
That's it. That's all I really need from you, actually.
I know.
Chris, it's a pleasure to have you. It always seems to go so fast when you're here.
It really does. But I can't believe it's over.
This is going to continue so you'll be back in, I'm sure, in the summer at some point. And I will tell anyone listening, if they want, I really encourage you to reach out to Real Options if you do need to get, you need some help, you need some guidance, and your children and your teens should really think about it. Because when they can't talk to you, they need to talk to somebody, and who's better equipped than Chris and your team?
And I got to say, on that note, I went out to your facility because you're in San Jose on
over off the Alameda, right?
Yeah. Wonderful people there. Yes. I had so much fun with these guys.
Really?
I didn't even know them, but I felt like I knew them all my life.
All right.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
They're just that kind
of
guy.
They're a lot of fun to work with.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So anyway, thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure. Chris from Real Options, do you want to give out your email or contact?
Sure, that would be great. Yeah, the phone number is 408-229-9836, extension 23. And you can reach me by email at education@realoptions.net.
Chris Canacandi. She's not Italian, by the way.
I just want to be.
Yeah, but it just sounds it. It sounds so Italian.
You look Italian. Hey, Canacandi. Where's the meatballs?
From the south. Thank you so much, Chris. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
And we'll be back again next week with another edition of People Helping People on 92.3 FM.